Hello, I'm Paul Scott. Today I'm talking to the directors of Trackmate, ticker T-R-A-K, which is listed on the London market on AIM. I've got John Watkins, Executive Chairman, and James Hedges, the Finance Director, with me on the line. So welcome, gents, and thanks very much for agreeing to do this interview.
Our pleasure.
Right, okie dokie. Then, first of all, I'd also like to thank all the private investors who've submitted questions for this audiocast. We've had an amazing response with 47 questions submitted. So this is obviously going to take quite a while to rattle through them all. So we'll probably divide this into two half-hour sections. And hopefully that way we can answer everyone's questions. Quick disclaimers, I do hold shares in Trackmate. I'm not charging a fee for doing this audiocast. And nothing in this audiocast represents a recommendation nor financial advice. So please do your own research. Okay, so let's kick off then. If I ask you to give us an overview of Trackmate, please.
Okay, well, Trackmate started in business in 2002 and floated in 2005 and has been on something of a journey. Started life as a hardware designer and supplier to other telematics service providers and migrated to becoming a fleet management software provider itself, so in the 2007-2008 timeline. Increasingly provided more and more sophisticated fleet management solutions for important clients like BAA and Saint-Gobain. And much more recently has got involved in the insurance space and has become much more of a data company now where we use sophisticated analytics to derive value from the data to help drive a behavior understanding for both fuel economy and insurance risk, and also understanding the way the vehicles work so that we can predict and manage service outcomes in the vehicle itself.
Okay, and you made three acquisitions as well as the organic business, haven't you? So I think we've got a separate section near the end on RouteMonkey, the most recent acquisition. Do you want to just briefly touch maybe on Box and was it DCS?
Second,
yes.
In the case of Box was a similar size telematics business that also had a subcontract electronic manufacturing capability. And so Box added bulk to the installed base, and it provided us with the ability to make our hardware in-house. To that point, we'd always subcontracted the manufacturing. And we felt with the next generation of products we had coming along, it's particularly important to have control of the manufacturing as well as the design and the supply chain. So Box was a reverse, so we had to have a readmission document to do that one. It brought with it a slightly different route to market, so because Box had focused on selling its solutions via resellers and distributors and dealers, whereas Trackmate has concentrated on selling its product direct to fleets. DCS was actually an acquisition where we didn't buy the company. We bought the business, the trade, and some of the assets of the company. And so DCS is now absorbed within Trackmate Limited financially. It operates out of its own business unit down in Bodmin. And it focuses on doing cameras for some aspects of it for the leisure market, but the primary interest for us was the Roadhawk brand that is doing dashboard cameras and the like for commercial vehicles.
Okay. Right, so now going on to reader questions, I've organized them into various sections. So we've got three questions about accounting queries. So question number one, this concerns the issue of net cash and gross cash. Now, it seems to me that there was just a mistake in the RNS in that the bullet point for your most recent results stated net cash when it should have said gross cash. So can you explain what happened on that front?
Well, unfortunately, this is a mistake, and it is a mistake that we've been doing in our interims for some years. It actually isn't a mistake that we've made in our prelims. And, of course, our balance sheets and so on, and even our commentary on occasions, accurately explains the situation. We have said net cash, and we should not have done. Our intention, of course, was to show that actually our financing of the business is actually quite conservative, because we always like to make sure that we've got cash available both for growth, for opportunities, and indeed if something, you know, went wrong, like a bad debt or something. So it was designed to show that we had available cash, but quite clearly we should not have called it net cash.
Okay, fair enough. Good, thanks for that. So question number two is, this again is a rather obscure accounting query where a question comes from Tom, who asks about, I've reworded the question slightly, he flagged up that there seemed to be about £115,000 discrepancy between the profits reported at Companies House for Box and the figures that were mentioned in the reverse takeover announcement. Could you explain what the difference was on that?
Yes, that's relatively simple. The accounts for Companies House were prepared by the company as a private company under UK GAAP, and for our acquisition admission document had to be restated under IFRS, and that was the difference. The admission document is the same figure as the announcement in our RNS. And, of course, the admission document was prepared by a highly professional external independent company as part of all the readmission documentation we had to do.
Yeah, okay, so a simple explanation on that point. Good. Okay, James asks question three. He says, do you feel the bearish attacks on TrackMate are a witch hunt that will culminate in nothing?
I'm not sure we're able to answer what they are. I mean, I'm sure they will culminate in nothing, because actually TrackMate's a really sound business, conservatively run, conservatively accounted, and, you know, time will prove that, and actually we can correct some factual stuff that was incorrect as we go through the ask the questions later too.
Okay, great. Next section now, just we have had a couple of questions about the structure of board. So Bearish Bull has asked you, John, why do you call yourself executive chairman instead of chief executive officer?
Well, the board employs me as executive chairman because actually I combine the role of chairman and chief executive, and I think that's the normal description for that situation.
Okay. And following on from that, Curly asks, in a similar vein, do you think it would be better to have an independent non-executive chairman?
Well, clearly the board has a nominations committee of two exceedingly strong independent non-execs, and we have external advisors, and so the constitution of the board is considered periodically. The facts at the moment are is that we're very much in execution mode. We do review strategy, but strategy is pretty much set, and it seems to be working. And so I think with the concentration on execution rather than new strategy, we feel that the combined role works just fine.
Okay. Question six is on dividends, and we've had two people ask this. Simon and David J. both asks, how long will it be realistically until you start paying dividends?
Well, we keep this under review regularly, and we always have the consideration of what is the best way of deploying any funds that we have and the cash that we generate. Is it better to fuel the growth that we think we can achieve, or do we think it's better to return it to the shareholders as dividends? And to this point in time, we've considered it better to retain it within the business to grow it. But you know that those things may change as cash flows develop and our business matures. And all I can say to that is that we'll keep it under review without at this point promising when we'll actually change our policy.
Okay, thank you. Question seven, and this is from Brian and Richard S., who basically asked the same question, so I've combined it. They've said, vehicles are becoming increasingly technology-led, straight from the factory. Therefore, what barriers to entry exist that would prevent automotive manufacturers from creating their own software equivalents of your product?
Well, there's no question that automotive vehicle manufacturers are doing exactly that. And so what we need to do is to recognize that there are customers that operate or manage or sort of sell a wide range of different marks and need to have data from that wide range of marks in a consistent format and use the data so they can analyze driver behavior and vehicle behavior across, you know, a big range. And so there's always going to be an aftermarket proposition in the competition with the OEs in many ways. And we believe that we'll be very successful in delivering aftermarket solutions so that our customers don't actually have to buy six or seven different solutions.
Okay. I mean, would you work, just as a follow-up question, would you work with, or are you working with vehicle manufacturers in any way, or is that some way off?
I think the answer to the question is, have we announced any working arrangements with OEMs? No, we haven't right now. Could we and would we like to? I think the answer is yes. I think it depends on the size of the vehicle builder as to the sort of supplier they would work with. I've long experience of working in the motor industry, and there's no question that the big car companies prefer to work with the big tier one electronics company.
Okay. Question eight, what's the key competitive advantages of TrackMate in a crowded sector? And that's two people have asked that question, Brian and Flintstone.
I think there's a sort of mix of an answer here. We're very focused on owning a high proportion of the IP in the solutions we sell. It gives us a high degree of control of the solution and the ability, if things aren't working quite the way we hope they would, we can find, you know, we look for the solution within our own remit rather than having to sort of work with a number of vendors to see if we can find where a problem is. And we believe we have very high quality product solutions and data. So I think we see ourselves as doing what we do better than most.
Okay. And then following on from that, Paul Bailey asks, there seem a lot of smaller telematics companies about. So what are the main competitive threats to TrackMate?
In truth, I don't think it's the smaller telematics companies that are the major threat to us. There's a scaling difficulty for all small companies, both in terms of financially growing and in terms of making their solutions work in larger quantities. So I don't spend too many sleepless nights worrying about smaller companies. I think there are some very interesting opportunities out there within some very large companies, and I think we have to be mindful of what they're doing. You know, we already know that some of the telephone carriers are investing in this space, and we have to be mindful that because it's a growing space and because it's a very interesting space, that we're going to bring in some new and very large competitors potentially. And so those are the ones that we have to be recognized are coming and do an exceptionally good job for our customers so that we keep our place.
Okay. Actually, John, the audio is a little bit quiet. Could I maybe ask you to move the microphone a bit closer to your mouth, perhaps,
so
we get a bit more volume? Right, question 10, still on products. Ramridge asks, why the absence of major customers such as DHL or UPS, etc.?
Well, the clue is, I suppose, in the name of the two customers you mentioned. They're both logistics firms. We do have two of the largest logistics trailer firms in our customer base announced in the last year or so. One's Bibby and the other is Downton's. So, you know, we do have major customers in that space. I just don't think we can be expected to win them all.
Yeah, okay. Right, question 11. This is from Fedor. He asks, how big do you see the potential telematics market growing to, and are there any plans for international expansion?
Okay, well, I tend to use Berg Insight data to answer this question. Their latest numbers suggest that in the fleet management space, there are something just over 4 million telematics installed in commercial vehicles, and that's roughly doubling over the next 5 years to something like 8 million. That's about a 15% per annum compound growth.
And that's so, globally, is it?
Well, no, that's Europe.
Okay.
There's a similar number in the U.S. as it happens. It's not a terribly different number, about 4 million. And so these are markets that are growing you know, pretty quickly. And so from a fleet management solution area, we're in quite a good space. The insurance sector, I think the forecasts are probably less reliable and much bigger. And again, there are something like 4.5 million telematics policies in Europe, and insurance telematics policies in Europe, and a lot more in America, and appears to be, you know, growing at quite a strong rate, you know, perhaps doubled in some years. So we're in two markets where there's very strong growth. The third part of our interest is in vehicle service and using telematics data to improve the service outcomes on vehicles. And that, of course, could be enormous, and I don't think anybody has any projections for the rate of growth of that opportunity.
Okay. Question 12, I omitted to note down who asked this, but somebody's asked how much of your technology is protected by patents?
We've applied for several patents to do with some of the algorithms that we've been developing for our data, from our data scientists. Historically, we've not been terribly interested in getting patents because sometimes that just tells your competitors what you're doing. But, of course, there's more of a commercial interest in doing so because of the patent box corporation tax treatment. And so we have got a few now lodged, applied for, but not actually granted yet.
Okay. Question 13. Somebody asks, who's this? Peter asks, are you in direct competition with Cortex Holdings, another AIM-listed company, I think? If so, does TrackMate have a competitive edge? And he notes that Cortex has a much higher operating profit margin than TrackMate at 37% and asks why that is.
Well, Cortex is a telematics business. It's focused on the SME fleet size. It's been providing fleet management software for quite a few years longer than we have, and so has an installed base with a long tail, and some of these, I would guess, if they've been in place for a long time, have quite high monthly fees. Mm. And so it's a good business. It doesn't appear to be a direct competitor in the sense that we're much more focused on larger fleets. We try and do a lot more data analysis for our customers. And I think margin is one of those things that is actually a function of how many new units you sell compared to your installed base. And everybody knows that, you know, the rate at which we've been installing units compared to our installed base has been exceptionally high over the last couple of years. And so that has an effect of distorting the margin in percentage terms.
Mm. Is that because we're jumping out of sequence here, but it follows on naturally. Is that because you have some upfront costs associated that you have to absorb with acquiring new customers and installing new boxes?
Well, it's because primarily we do not make much profit on the hardware when we sell it and install it.
We
put through our accounts the cost of installation at the cost it costs us, and we put the hardware element of the sale through at the price we charge third parties for hardware. And so that's relatively low margin. And the service fees, the recurring revenues that we charge there on our end, are actually high margin because the variable cost is relatively low.
Mm. Okay. Now, Richard has asked two questions. He said, surely bad drivers will refuse to have this technology in their cars as it could incriminate them if they have a crash, and even good drivers will resist this Big Brother snooping over their driving.
Yes, there's an element of that, I'm sure. I think this is probably referring to the insurance space rather than the fleet management space. When I first got involved in telematics, I think there was an element of HR and big companies worried about what the drivers would think about the telematics, you know, spy on the cab. But I just don't get that as a complaint at all now. In insurance, I think to an extent, because selecting an insurance policy with telematics is an option, it probably is self-selecting the better drivers. But there's, I forget who it was, but there was somebody who recently said that they felt that insurance telematics would go from being an opt-in option to an opt-out option. And so I think there will be a transition over the next few years that people will be more and more expected to have insurance policies with telematics.
Okay. And then Richard also quips, as an aside, that he would be worried about this app being used as spyware by suspicious wives to track their husbands' movements. So,
well, I think they can do that all sorts of other ways as well. But of course,
well, yeah.
My experience, of course, is quite a lot of fathers pay for the insurance for their young driver children, and they sort of do use it for that.
Okay. Question 16, then. Mark M. asks, TrackMate claims to have over 200,000 units installed worldwide. So how sticky is the revenue from that? So what's the churn rate? And how many of those 200,000 units are paying ongoing monthly fees to you?
The 200,000 units is a number that I'm not 100% familiar with. When we did the last set of interims, we announced that we had 132,000 units that were installed and reporting to our servers. Mm-hmm. And so all those are paying monthly fees to us. Over the history, we've supplied a great deal more than 200,000 units to other telematics companies and the like. And if we sell them to a third party, we don't get monthly fees from those at all. So the number is we have 132,000, or at least we had 132,000 at the end of September, reporting to our servers and paying fees.
Okay. And the churn rate on that?
Well, the churn rate's relatively low. It's in the 5 to 10% range. We don't disclose that in truth, but it is lower than the market average for fleet management. Mm-hmm. Insurance is a higher number than that, and we can't disclose that, I'm afraid.
Okay. Question 17, Mark M. again asks what the gross margin is for monthly subscriptions and what the cost of sales are, which he's presuming is just mainly mobile telephony charges.
Well, he's right that our cost of sales is just the mobile telephony charges, but unfortunately I'm not going to answer the other question because I think that's commercially quite sensitive. I am prepared to say is it's high.
Good, okay. Question 18, Paul Fish asks, could I ask the geographical spread of TrackMate and your plans for future geographical spread?
90% of our business is billed to UK customers, and that's been the situation for some time. We have started a sales office in the Czech Republic out of our engineering center there, and that's starting to gain traction. We hope to be able to secure customers that we can follow into new geographies. It de-risks it, and it gives us some revenues from the get-go. So therefore, not only de-risks it, but it reduces the investment cost. And I think some of that development will take place, relatively soon.
Okay. Right. And Frank asks, how does your sales pipeline compare with, say, 6 and 12 months ago?
I think it's fair to say that our sales pipeline is slightly bigger than both those two those periods. We've deployed more sales resource, and so I think they are generating more inquiries, more leads, more opportunities.
Okay. Great. Question 21. Paul asks, is it true that most of your growth has come from acquisitions? How much organic growth potential is there?
Well, it's actually not true. That's one of the things I'm pleased to correct. We haven't done anything of reallocating revenues out of acquisitions into any of the other companies. So each of the companies has, retained its own customer base. And so if we look at TrackMate Limited, which is the one that's, we've had for a long time and has the long history, in 2014, its sales growth was 14% over the 2013 number. And in 2015, it was 72% above the 2014 number.
Mm.
So actually jolly nearly doubled over that two-year period. And so that's pure organic growth within within TrackMate.
Yeah. Okay. Question 22, this is from Dan. He says, so you bought an electronics manufacturing company, a camera company, and a scheduling company. What other technologies do you want to buy next?
Well, we've got a very strong product line now, and we have some engineering work streams in place to integrate those products to create an even more compelling solution for our fleet and insurance customers. And so we're very much focused on taking what we have and building out from it and maximizing it. And so I'm on the look for stuff, but I'm not focused on finding anything particular at the moment.
Okay. And in terms of financing future acquisitions, would you be looking at doing more placings or debt or a mixture of the two?
Well, I suppose you have to look at the history. We did Box with 50-50 placing shares, you know, which the directors did half the half, if you like, and 50% with debt. When we did DCS, bought the assets of DCS, we did that entirely with cash that we'd generated and debt. And when we did RootMonkey, because we actually had such a strong demand from our shares from institutions, we actually agreed to place a lot more shares than we'd originally intended. And so in the end, we did that acquisition largely with equity, although we'd originally intended to do that roughly half and half.
Okay.
So that's how we do it in the future, I guess.
So it's a similar sort of thing in the future, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. James, question 23. James asks, what skills do you need to hire to continue your growth?
I believe our company is staffed with exceptional people, very high quality people, and we've insisted on doing that on all our recruitment. And so finding people of the caliber to match the ones we've hired is probably our biggest challenge, primarily in engineering and marketing, sales, I guess. So those are the areas where we interview the most and look the hardest.
Okay. Is there much of a staff turnover in sales and marketing?
I can't think of anybody who's left in the last couple of years.
Okay, excellent. Well, excellent, providing they're achieving targets. Not excellent if they're not. But, okay, question 24. This is asked by Blonde Demon. Asks, what are your plans for long-term growth for TrackMate?
Well, you only have to look at how big some of the companies are in our space to see how big it's possible to become. So when I've been asked this question, I usually say, we'll grow as large as we're capable of managing, and it's simply down to the quality of us now.
Okay, so it's just execution, and what will be then in terms of market performance, I guess. Okay, question 25, this is from Roy Edwards, a little bit more general. He's saying, I invest in companies of quality with a long-term view on any such holding. What can the CEO say that would encourage my investment in his company?
Well, I think at the risk of repeating myself, we have high-quality people generating high-quality solutions and data. We're in a very interesting market that's growing very quickly, and so it's a combination of events that should make a very attractive investment.
Okay. Question 26, which I think will probably make the last one of part one. Gus asks, why has free cash flow been limited to date? Is this a function of upfront installation costs and costs of customer acquisition? And when will free cash flow increase?
Well, I think there's a little bit of misinformation out there about what our cash flow and free cash generation actually is. So if I can give you some facts. In the 2 years, 2013-14, 2014-15, we actually had a free cash flow of £951,000.
Yeah.
And we had a profit before tax of £2.098 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we turned 45% of the profit before tax to cash. If you rerun those numbers with adding back the exceptional costs, actually, because we had the exceptional costs in 2013-14 of Box, actually that percentage goes from 45% to 51%, and the cash generation is 1.384 million. So in that two-year period, slightly distorted by the fact that we had a big prepayment in March 2014 from a very large customer of ours, which we disclosed. So that masked the sort of the period between 14 and 15 and 13 and 14. But that's the fact for the 2 years. For the 2.5 years, the 30 months, on a profit before tax disclosed of 3.33 million, we generated 1.208 million cash. Now that's 36%. And if you add back the exceptionals, it goes to 1.8 million, which is 43%. Now you might ask yourself why it's less on the 30-month analysis to the 24-month analysis. And that's entirely down to the fact that the history of TrackMate is that we generate much more cash in the second half than the first half. And there are, you know, two reasons for that. The first is that actually we make more money in the second half than the first half. And the other reason, and actually more significant reason, is that we collect some of our customers pay annually in advance during the first quarter of a calendar year, which therefore is a payment before the end of our financial year.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because that's Q4 in your financial year, isn't
correct.
It?
Now, obviously, we don't. If we get the money in, we don't take the revenue. We put it into deferred income for the 9 months that we haven't, you know, provided the service for. But it does bring the cash in. And so, I think Lorne Daniels, the broker analyst at ThinCap, he's projected a strong cash flow in the second half.
Okay. Good. Right. If we take a break now, so if we hang up and then sort of leave it a minute and dial back in again, then we can have a separate audio file for part two. So shall we do that now?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. Thanks, then. Cheers. Bye.
John Watkins.